The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices. Washington.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we are examining how the horrific events of last week, the shooting of black men by police officers in Minnesota and Louisiana, and of course the deadly ambush of police officers, white police officers, in Dallas, Texas, by a black man. We are talking to interracial couples tonight. We're talking to Michael Hill and Michaeline Giampoli. They've been married for 20 years. They also have a daughter. Michael is black. Michaeline is white. Also, Crystalyn Karazin, author of Swirling, How to Date, Mate, and Relate, Mixing Race, Culture, and Creed. She is a black woman married to a white man. Lines are open. We're going to take your phone calls at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Crystalyn, before the break, we were talking about Black Lives Matter versus All Lives Matter. You were talking about the numbers and the ratios of the killings. Please go right ahead.
Right. I mean, it goes back to the study in the Washington Post, and that, yes, the majority of police incidences in regards to killings, the majority were white. However, if you stand up against the population, you see that minorities are disproportionately represented. So when you have these discussions, there's this trigger oftentimes where white people may feel a certain level of guilt, and that guilt comes out as defensiveness. And that is what you see from a psychological standpoint. And because that your partner may have a certain level of defensiveness because maybe they feel guilty because they feel like they are the avatar for all white people. They feel like they're being the whipping boy. It can be incredibly hurtful for your partner who is maybe of a minority group, whether they're Hispanic or black, and they're feeling like you're not hearing them and hearing what they're saying. And it's incredibly hurtful when they're saying, look, this is what's happening. This is a very real situation. And it wasn't that long ago when we saw people being, and I think this is very similar to what we're seeing now with the camera phones, when we saw black people being hosed down the street with high-powered hoses, this is the same type of thing.
Well, let me go. I've got to go to the phones.
Okay.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Jason calling from Manassas, Virginia. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to briefly say that, it's a tragedy what's going on in America today. I mean, I have my family, my father's side is law enforcement, or my mother's side is military, so that's where I come from. And, it's the way I see it, more people, when they're affected by this police brutality, where are the lawsuits, the civil lawsuits? You got the Freddie Grays, the Michael Browns, but why aren't these families, these communities pursuing the pockets of, these city or state or local, organizations to hit them where it hurts the
most.
Let us say, Jason, as Crystalyn was suggesting, in some way, shape, or form, many of them are, for example, Freddie Gray's family, they settled with the city of Baltimore for some $6.4 million.
Right.
But there are other, there are certainly other lawsuits, but I think that civil lawsuits, some could argue, is not about justice. And Diamond Reynolds said today, the girlfriend of the man who was shot just last week by the police officer in Minnesota, she said she wants justice. And she said she wants to see the officers punished. So, certainly I think these things do happen, but I think the bigger concern is justice and not civil penalties. And often those things come later. But thank you so much. I appreciate your phone call.
Can I just
real quick, go ahead, please.
A lot of times when there's a civil settlement, part of the settlement is that they can't speak about what the settlement is or how much money it is, or they can't talk about it anymore.
Yeah.
So it's almost like being paid to hush.
There's another aspect of that that gets to the point of these murders, and we're going to call them murders because that's what they are. They're terrible. But what about just the day-to-day indignities of having being stopped for having a broken taillight that isn't a broken taillight, or having people talk to you disrespectfully, or having people disrespect you in front of your children?
Mm-hmm.
There's really no civil suit for that.
Yeah.
It still hurts. And living with that your entire life as a black man is grinding in ways that I think people don't realize. But how are you going to sue every cop that pulled you over for a busted taillight that wasn't busted?
Yeah.
What's the payoff on that? And, you know, is it worth even your time? But then the flip side is, what's it cost you mentally and spiritually to just swallow that every day?
Well said. Nikki, calling from Suitland, Maryland. Nikki, what's on your mind?
Hi. Yes, I had a similar comment, a question about the solution to this problem that we have, that some are trying to say it's not racially motivated. But I mean, I believe that if our police officers were trained to be sensitive to, you know, their racial biases, and also wanted to know if something can be done to enforce the civil rights acts that have already been in place as a result of some of the racial discrimination that we have experienced in this country.
Let me see if my guest can at least try to address that first part. Michael, go right ahead.
So those are great comments. I was actually talking with a friend yesterday, and we commented that United States is one of the few industrialized countries that doesn't have a uniform police code.
Oh, yeah. It's state to state,
it's state
city
to state. And a lot of the people who fight against that uniform police code, in other contexts, what are they talking about? Well, we have traditional American values that any reasonable person should be able to accept and understand. And it seems like if you have those traditional values that everybody can accept, then we should be able to train every police officer in the country to behave and police in the same way.
And let me say this, Nikki, you spoke about dealing with civil rights. In almost every single case, from Michael Brown all the way up to the case in Louisiana, the federal government, the Justice Department, is already looking into civil rights violations. As a matter of fact, even the case of Natasha McKenna in Fairfax County, the mentally ill inmate who died after tussling with six sheriff's deputies and was tasered, even though charges were not brought against the six sheriff's deputies, state charges were not brought. This is still part of a civil rights investigation. And so, yes, these things are happening. The question is the outcome. That is the big, big issue. Nikki, thank you so much for giving us a call. I want to ask Michaeline, when you hear your husband talk about the effect of these things as a black man, do you get it? Have you always gotten it? Are you just getting it? How would you characterize that?
Well, I actually, when I was going to school, it was in Marin County, and my school had Marin County in California.
Oh, okay.
Very, very rich county. My school had recently been integrated, and most white people pulled their kids out of school, and my parents kept me in that school. So I've grown up very familiar with African-American culture. I've been surrounded on the playground, and some kids were threatening to beat me up because I was white. And one of my friends stood up and said, no, it's okay. She's one of the good ones. So I come from this. My college thesis was teaching the diversity of African-American culture in the classroom. I'm a museum educator. All that to say, I realize that I can't completely understand, because I don't walk in his shoes. What I see just makes me sick at heart and pained. I was teasing one of our friends who's also African American about, oh, you're 40, you're so old. He's like, I just thank God that I made it to 40.
When you hear somebody say that, because you know what he's talking about, what do you think?
What I think is how very difficult it is. I mean, I just, one of the things that happened with the first shootings was I really, really started to realize why, you know, how it must just be so frightening to be an African-American male in today's society. And I know that it's broader than there's other people that are victims of police violence. But this is my personal experience living with a black man of worrying when he doesn't, if he's late coming home, checking to make sure that there's other black people where we are. We were driving through Mississippi once and we decided not to get out of the car together because it's not just that he's an African American man, but that we are in a biraceial marriage. So those, that's, I, even when I moved into our neighborhood, I was a little concerned because our neighborhood was majority African American. Then I realized as long as we kept our lawn cut, they really didn't care. but it, those
it's
are the,
much more about the lawn care.
Yeah, I'm sure. let me go back to the phone lines. You two were hilarious. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Terry, calling from Fairfax, Virginia. What's on your mind? Terry, go right ahead. Are you there?
Okay, yeah, I'm here.
Go right ahead. Turn your radio down, please. Go right ahead.
Yeah, it, this conversation and following it is just the pain that she expresses in a relationship to express what's really actually happening in America. Well, I mean, it's happening everywhere. But about this brutality and being a black man, I mean, the thing one lady caller brought up to you guys is the mentality of people in power. It has a lot to do with that, and of course, on the court. So I'm real sensitive to see how life is treating people, but I think it's more a spiritual thing than it is anything else. That's all my statement.
Okay. Terry, thank you so much. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Nilo, calling from D.C. Did I get that right? Is it Nilo or Nilo?
Hello.
Yeah, go right ahead, please.
Yes, yes. I was calling, and, you know, it's basically, it's a history, you know, and when you look back at history, what you find is a lot of interracial mixing, a lot of things that bring us to this day that you, it shouldn't be strange to find couples being interracially in love or together or whatever, but you don't find it strange because of the history being so strained on black men in America, whereas we have never felt a part of the system to the point of believing that we can, you know, the public servant actually derive their powers from us. And when we're stopped by the police or so on and so forth, most African-American men, myself, I can say for sure, you know, it rises up a certain what they're stopping me for, and then when they come to the car, they don't tell me what they're stopping me for. They just
So, Nilo, real quick, what's your point? What, please, I've got to go to a break.
Understood. My point is that I seriously don't think that America will get it until we come together as a nation and begin to address the issues with the police and let them know off from top to the last that we're not going to stand for this, that cop in Minnesota should be arrested. He should have been immediately arrested when he shot in that car with that child in there and that woman in there. There was no reason for that, and this stuff needs to stop. And we can't do it unless we do these type of things together and demand that cops like that be arrested, period, without even question on something like as clear as that.
Well, Nilo, thank you so much. I appreciate your input. Need to take a break when we come back. More conversations about the effect of the past week on interracial relationships, the literal black and white of it. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our discussion about the effect of the tragic events of last week and how they impact interracial relationships. Crystalline, an earlier caller made a comment when they were talking about the effect on children, and then you went on to say that you really haven't had this discussion with your children because your children are so young. How old are your children?
I have four. My youngest is six, so it goes six. My son is 10. My daughter is 13, and I have an 18-year-old.
Well, even
I have three girls and one boy, and we haven't really sat down and talked to the boy yet.
Well, my question. Don't you think that certainly it is time? Because, and this is why I say that, because the child of Diamond Reynolds and Philando Castile was 4 years old, and she saw a police officer shoot and kill her father.
Absolutely. I actually did. I covered that situation on the blog beyondblackwhite.com and my YouTube channel, because based on the information that was provided at the time, this man did everything right. He was, you know, he was gainfully employed. He was not a felon. You know, he didn't have babies all over the place. He wasn't a thug. He stayed on a job long enough to be promoted to a supervisor. And he, you know, he had a weapon, and from what I understand, he had a conceal and carry permit. And it was the first time, and here's the thing that's very, it's interesting that you say this now, is that up until that happened, I thought there was a little part of myself that said, you know, it's not like these guys went to Bible study. It's not like they were on their way to Bible study, carrying their Bibles, and then somebody harassed them.
Kristen, I don't want you to miss the point.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking about children.
Yeah, okay, I'm getting to
okay,
that.
Well, go ahead. Let's get to it. I only have a few more minutes.
Basically, what I'm saying is that there was always a part of me that said, well, you know, people who follow the law and don't do anything wrong will, for the most part, not have a problem. So it wasn't until that happened that I realized that, you know what, you know, sitting down with me and my husband, we need to talk about this, because you can still do everything right. Because I think in the back of our heads, we want the cops to be good. We don't want to have that little niggling part in the back of our minds saying that this, you know, is this cop going to follow the rules, or is he going to take advantage of his authority and abuse me in some way? I don't think any of us want to have that.
Well, let me ask Michaeline about this, because when I mentioned that, you had a bit of a reaction. What were you thinking just now?
Well, one of the things I was thinking is I know some young men at work that look like that. When they're at work, they are always articulate. The kind of men that I would hope my daughter would have a crush on, or maybe eventually marry. And I was watching one of them as he was crossing the street on his way to work, and over his I can't really mention my place of work because I'm an federal employee.
Go ahead.
But anyway, but over his uniform he had a hoodie, and I'm looking at him thinking, I know Mark for being a wonderful, articulate, gentle soul who's going to college and doing really well for himself. But I'm betting that as somebody who doesn't know him or has preconceived notions about the way youth dress would think of him as a thug. And also with my nephews, as he was saying, my nephews, they wear the hoodies. They have, you know, their pants may be a little low. So people are looking at the outside. They're not judging people for who they are, but the way they appear. And one of the previous callers was talking about sensitivity training. And I think just the way youth dress is one of the things they need to understand.
So what would you tell your daughter? Because you said that, what have you told your daughter since you say you've had these conversations?
We've been talking with Lucy since she was 5 or 6 about this stuff.
And what have you said?
Everything. We've been talking about jury nullification. We've been talking about voter nullification. We listen to the news. And when she says, what's voter nullification? We explain what voter nullification is. When politics comes on the news and we talk about it, you got to raise woke kids, because if you don't, you're not arming your child to live in the world.
But as a biracial child, and I've met Lucia, and she is delightful and bright and talkative and engaging and all of the wonderful things that I could say about a child and would want for any young child. But when you talk to her about issues of race, particularly these difficult, painful life and death issues, How do you address them with her?
It hurts. It's painful. You need to watch out. You need to, I tell her all the time, you are biracial and you should take full advantage of and bask in the glory of your entire ancestry, because it's broader than that. We have Native American people and you have Welsh people, Michaeline, in your background. But you need to understand, when you walk out in the world, people are looking at you as a black kid. You might be a light-skinned black kid, but at least right now in American history, people are looking at you as a black kid.
You wanted to say something.
Well, I also wanted to say that she's also grappling with issues of identity. And I feel very fortunate that she embraces both sides of her identity. But she also understands the 132nd rule and understands that people are going to assume that she's African-American because of that particular rule. But then I point at, well, our president, he's also half white and half black. He identifies as an African-American, and that's her choice. But I want her to be proud of who she is. I want her to be comfortable with who she is. And she does sometimes get questioned at school about, like, what are you? And she's like, well, I'm an American. And I know that that may sound facile, but she's, you know, it's, I think it's really important for people to, it's just challenging when you're trying to bring somebody together that's mixed race. And I know that we're making progress in many ways, but these shootings are always feel like two steps back. And again, I know, to Crystalyn's point, it's not all just African Americans, that there are a lot of other people that suffer from police brutality.
Yeah, Native Americans are catching it with the same kind of stuff. But the other thing that I want to say,
you know, out west where there's a considerably larger population.
And a lot of that we don't hear about because those are sovereign nations. So when police are killing them, it's not happening, quote unquote, in America. But the other thing that I wanted to say is that I've tried, especially when I was younger, to do everything right, to not be that guy. It doesn't matter.
Yes.
And I don't want, frankly, my nephews, who sometimes are doing the wrong thing, but whom I love, they shouldn't be the victim of a summary death sentence because they're not doing the exact right thing. Our country is full of European American men who are doing horrible things.
Yeah.
Nobody's killing them on the spot.
Crystalyn, as a black woman married to a white guy, what is the advice that you would give to new interracial couples or couples who are having these kinds of social struggles when these issues come up in the headlines?
I can't tell you how many letters I've gotten in the past few days about this. It happened during the Charleston situation, where both parties are asking me, how do I broach this subject without getting too big, drawn-out fights? And so I put together a list of things that are on the blog. So if there's any way that we can link to it, because it'd be too...
Well, what's the website?
The website is beyondblackwhite.com. And the title is Interracial Couples: How Are You Talking to Your Partners About the Recent Unrest?
So with that in mind, again, I ask, what is the first thing that you would tell a couple that came to you and said help?
Shut up and listen.
What do you mean?
Shut up and listen to both sides of the situation. Don't allow your preconceived notion of what you think this person might say, because you're looking at them not as an individual, but you're looking at them as a representation of an entire race. You have to listen to what the person has to say. For white people, you do have to be quiet and listen to what people have to say, and understand that even though you lived in the same country, the two of you might have distinct experiences and cultural things that have happened to you that shape who you are, and you have to be sensitive to that. And for black people, you can't look at a white person and let them be the avatar and whipping boy for every person that has done evil. Another thing that you need to do in terms of healing, once you guys have had a chance to discuss and you've let the other person hear their side and you've been sensitive and you acknowledge that, yes, there is still racism in this country, and that's really what's important. The essence is that the person who is in pain needs for you to acknowledge that this is real instead of just saying, no, that didn't happen. No, mm-hmm. that's not what it is. Well, maybe if he had been doing this, or maybe if he had been wearing that, or maybe if she didn't do this. You need to be able to get to a point where you can acknowledge this.
Well, real quick, because I'm running out of time. Mm-hmm. I want to ask Michaeline, because I want to make sure that she has an opportunity to speak for every white woman in America. your advice for interracial couples who may be struggling with this.
Well, I think it's really important, first and foremost, to understand the history and to really understand that this is not something that just happened yesterday, that there's been systematic racism for hundreds of years, and that even though we as white people feel like we're doing the right thing, that there is so much more that needs to be done, and that we need to understand that even though we feel that we are sensitive and understanding, that there's just some pain that we may not be able to understand. And as Crystalyn was saying, as allowing our partner to really tell us about that and really listen. But I think, again, putting it in context and understanding this long history and understanding that, just basically looking at the whole picture and listening to your partner is incredibly important.
I want to thank all of you, Michael Hill, Michaeline Giampoli, and Crystalyn Karazin, for participating in this really sensitive, very personal conversation. I thank you. Thank you for your courage in coming on and talking about this, and particularly for you, Michael and Michaeline, because of the traveling that you do. You know, just make sure that you take care of yourselves. And certainly, Crystalyn, please tell your husband we said hello. And I want to thank you also for participating in this conversation.
Harold, can I just have a quick last word?
I've got 10 seconds, real quick.
Couples, here's how you heal. Do something together to make a change. Make sure you decide whether it's marching, giving money, volunteering. Do it together, and that will bring us towards healing.
Or share a chocolate and vanilla ice cream cone.
Exactly.
That is The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Monday, July 11th. I'm Harold Fisher. You can reach me at hfisher@whur.com, on Facebook at Harold Fisher, WHUR, or Twitter at Daily Drum WHUR. Now stay tuned for The Connection with Lorna Newton. Good night.
The Howard University Radio.